Okay.
This is the second interview of, second session of the interview with Edwin Young and Don Smith. It's now the 27th of January. I spent an evening last week with Mary Lou Motz at the print shop and a couple of bottles of wine in which they talked about the legislature and the university. And I haven't touched upon that very much in interviews. You said a little bit about lobbying last time. But these questions are about that. We don't have to go in this order, but I'd be interested in what, in your version of what was happening in the legislature as you came in the 70s, as merger started. Because from what they said, the legislature was changing at that time.
Mm-hmm. Want to start at, or?
Well, I'll give you some off the top of my head recollections. When I first became chancellor, and all hell had been loose for a couple, year and a half, 2 years really, Bob Fleming had had it and then Sewell, people downtown were getting quite restless, but they were also beginning to think that it wasn't quite so simple. There was a committee set up to investigate the university, and that committee asked lots of questions. I appeared before it a number of times. I was always treated very well. Carl Thompson was on the committee, and Carl sort of made sure that the university's point of view was represented. He was very supportive, and the committee, and then it sort of just faded away. I don't know if they ever even if they reported or not, but it didn't make any great difference. That was one of my impressions.
Mm-hmm.
Other impressions are, I remember the merger business, that very tense time when it was in the Joint Finance Committee, and George Molinaro was always a very strong supporter of the university, was opposed to it, but he found some reason to leave the room when the vote came and it went by.
Yeah, and you mentioned that last time.
Yeah, so that was critical in what, I suppose, party pressure, whatever. But anyway, I remember that event. The other thing which I may have mentioned was that Clauser, who was now the Department of Administration, was the sort of agent for the Republicans. He was their, I don't know what his title was, but he was ran errands for the Republican caucus and so on. He had decided, along with, I think, with Frelich maybe, who was the Republicans were in charge, was the speaker, that the university police should be put under the then Bill Emery, the Madison chief of police, and so that they'd be tough-minded. And we fought that very hard and just barely beat it off. And so Clauser and I had exchange of words that were pretty strong. That I don't know if we've ever run into each other since. But we kept the police. No particular backfire. My experience with the legislature, I was always treated very courteously, the people were always willing to see me and listen, mm-hmm. and talk, and often they were committed to something else. But we were under the Knowles administration. We had a very friendly administration. A chap who was just retired as head of the State Chamber of Commerce and Manufacturers Association was his chief assistant, and executive secretary or whatever. He was very helpful, extraordinarily helpful, when I had to have the National Guard or whatever, which they paid quite a heavy political price for. So then after the merger, my chief appearances were at budget hearings. Budget would be presented. John Weaver would present the budget, And then I would be called upon to answer questions about Madison.
In the Joint Finance Committee.
Joint Finance Committee, yes. And again, I just had a feeling that that nobody, they gave John a hard time because they could get him flustered, you see, and then he'd get upset. But that wasn't deliberate. It wasn't really deliberate baiting him. He thought sometimes, now, Don, who saw some of these things too, may have a different view of this, but John came with a set speech, you see, and they don't really like set speeches very much down there. They make a lot of them, but they don't like them. And so they'd get him off and on, pick on some particular thing, and instead of, you know, kind of a dodging it, he'd try to give them a straight reasons, and they didn't sometimes get into arguments. But I was more, I don't know if I accomplished any more, but I was less likely to get into a direct confrontation, which we didn't. And so I would say that the agenda, though, was really set by the governor. Pat Lucy set the agenda with the budget, and his people were working at it, and they had when he had a majority, you know, when it was all said and done, we didn't get very far from that agenda. But I never felt, I didn't think that our legislative experience was bad. I liked some of the older legislators better than some of the younger ones, because the older ones, if they didn't agree with you, they said so and they kept their word, and if they were going to support you, they said so and kept their word. Whereas I think some of the younger ones developed a habit of having both ears to the ground at the same time.
Could you name some names?
No.
I'll be happy to.
I don't remember. Well, I try to think. The joint chairman of the finance committee was Molinaro at one time, and this and the Republican from up near Fond du Lac.
The
older man.
Fond du Lac, not the big heavy set one. No, I know the one you mean, the rural farmer.
Mm-hmm. He was about as near a statesman as we.
Yeah,
in the legislature.
He was very, very good.
And again, very sympathetic. Didn't necessarily mean, but you knew exactly where you stood, and you could advise you how to change things so you'd get somewhere. And but my impression was that the legislature that wanted the university to succeed, and that the newspaper reporters were so selective in their reporting because they're always looking for some kind of confrontation, some kind of a row, something to stir up. And that was my impression. So reading the papers, one doesn't get, I never got the same impression of anything I attended as what I read in the papers. Mm-hmm. There were some, once in a while it was a good reporter. Milwaukee, for a while, the State Journal had some, but they were, and then the, oh, there was one very good one. He had his own column. He came out of Green Bay. His son just died in Washington. The father was a newspaper man here in town, and his reporting was very accurate. But out of the whole bunch, they were mostly interested in getting something, seeing
some
something.
Kind of an argument.
Mm-hmm. That's my impression of them. So I think anybody who searched the newspapers to get the, might get the facts, but I don't think they would get the flavor exactly, because I got the flavor of friendly people, or even if they weren't very friendly, they were cautious enough not to appear to be anti-university.
Well, that was, there were some who were not, I think quite visibly anti-university and were quite influential, and I'd like to single out one of them if I
will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Frelick was one of them.
Well, no, I'm talking about Ed Giacomonis.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, later on. Yeah,
later on. He was, but Giacomonis was there when you became president, and he was a very, very difficult man and a very, very influential man.
Mm-hmm. He had an assistant who worked very hard at feeding him materials, anti-university materials.
Yeah.
But on the whole.
Hmm. Could I comment on the legislature?
Yes.
See, I think two things were happening in retrospect. One was a great enthusiasm for management theory being applied to public agencies, which developed in the latter part of the 60s, and as usual was an invention of university professors who often devise theories and ideas which are which rise up to haunt us later. And a part of that was the notion of management information systems. And there were other notions that became very popular, and by the early 70s they were floating all over the country. One of them was legislative oversight, and another was zero-based budgeting. Another was accountability. Accountability became a God word to the young legislators. Now, they took their work seriously. A lot of the new legislators who came in with Lucy and who have been coming in steadily ever since were what I would refer to as career legislators. They were young men who had not had any career prior to their moving into politics, or if they'd had one, it had been so attenuated and so lackluster that it was not anything that was going to bring them great fame or fortune. And they would they were bright, better educated than their predecessors. They had nothing to do, however, but be full-time legislators and devote themselves to the political arts of getting elected, getting reelected, and consolidating political power. Now, they were also very much interested in theoretically how they could make government more effective, and in that sense, how they could then make names for themselves and become luminous and visible. So those things began to happen. Now, when I came here, the Speaker of the House was Norman Anderson, mm-hmm. who was an excellent man. And in the first session, I think Ed is absolutely right, Pat Lucy set the agenda in the first budget session, and he set the agenda for the second one. But to the extent that that could be mediated and civilized, Norman Anderson was approachable and was extremely friendly, and he would use such capacity as he had to see to it that we weren't badly wounded. And in fact, there were two or three instances where, without being publicly visible, he was helping us with the committees. Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in this story, I want to get in the record, the way the Cap Times did him in.
Yeah.
One of the mm-hmm. dirtiest pieces of business. You know about it? Well, there was some small mm-hmm. meeting to work out something behind the scenes, which he would participate in or chaired, and they wouldn't let the Cap Times in. So the Cap Times then started to crusade against him, and they got this dope-peddling bear from the East Side elected.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Mm-hmm. This brought Jacomonas onto the scene, too, in importance.
Then
they did us more damage than all their, you know.
Jacomonas then was elected Speaker. And from then on, life was absolutely miserable, in my judgment.
What year? When is this?
When did this that would have been 75, wouldn't it? Or was it 70? He was reelected in, it had been 75, I believe. And he was reelected in 77. He had two terms.
He's just been fired.
Yeah. He's currently unemployed.
He'll turn up.
Now, Jacomonas was a bright man and an able parliamentarian. But as a human being, I can't say enough about him without being...
He knew all about higher education because he taught a term or two at Waukesha Center.
One of the centers, and he was an expert on higher education. But the worst thing about him was he wouldn't talk to anybody. His office was absolutely closed to me. I could not see him. I never had a conversation with him except over the table at a committee hearing when he would ask ugly questions and sneer at any answer. And those were very brief. He had this legislative assistant, and the only person that we could ever meet as in Jack Amonis's office was this young man who was himself a very strange and anti-university sort who God knows how much influence he had. He apparently had a great deal.
He drafted documents.
He would draft documents, and Jack Amonis would carry them. Well, you remember, Ed, that you tried to get an appointment with Jack Amonis. Now, this is almost unprecedented.
He wrote... The president.
Yeah. He would not see the president of the system.
Did he ever say why?
Until we had clarified the nature of our business with Mr. White...
Had to work it out. We're supposed to work.
Yeah, we had to work things out because he was much too busy.
Mr. White. Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't anything to do with open meetings or.
No. It was. It was that he knew that we were. Basically, we're opposite sides, because his wanting to run things and we didn't want to be run. That was part of it, but he was just mean, and it was power showing his power too. But he was the sort of almost the exception in this.
On the other hand, he controlled the key people. He controlled Norquist. He controlled Kleska. When I say controlled, I don't mean he could order them.
But he made the appointments.
He turned them into powers. Mm-hmm. They were dependent upon him for their position and their influence. And they were young, aspiring legislators too.
I remember. Mm-hmm. When he came up for the re-election the second time as Speaker, Midge Miller voted for him and afterwards apologized to me that she voted for him because she said, we need somebody from Madison in his camp.
Well,
you can argue that way, but I never thought Midge's judgment was the greatest. Her heart was always in the room.
I ran into that. I had the disheartening experience. I would go in and talk to Midge about Jack Amonis's treatment and about some of his cronies who were doing all sorts of peculiar things in the hearings. And she'd say I was absolutely right. She'd be totally sympathetic, and she would. Make all kinds of noise at the meetings of the Education Committee chaired by Dick Flintrop, which had absolutely no influence on joint finance. And then when it came time to vote, she voted for him. And I was...
She wanted to keep her chairmanship.
She wanted to keep her chairmanship, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was that simple. They
got to be a politician to be a statesman.
Jack Amonis was a ruthless man. And it was well known that the way he kept his speakership was not because anybody liked him, but because they were not certain that anybody could beat him. And if you worked on the other camp, in fact, people who did work on the other camp went into limbo. They lost their chairmanships. They were out of the inner councils. Amendments were ignored, and it was really a very ruthless sort of power control, although very marginal. He was always in a very, very delicate situation.
He never had
situation.
He had just enough votes.
Yeah,
and
Midge
and one or two other people could have defeated him if they'd had the guts.
They could have, yeah. I don't think there's any question about that, but they were scared of him, and he had that kind of personality. We had then, I think, really a combination of people who had all of this theory about how you make the university more accountable, how you shape it up, how you get it under the control of the legislature, what they call legislative oversight, and how you send our representatives through the Legislative Audit Bureau out to do performance auditing, not simply to find out whether you're honest, but to find out whether or not you know how to administer things in the way the legislature wants them administered. It was a very strange period, and I think it's still going on, as a matter of fact.
Well, obviously, mm-hmm. because the pattern of careers was established, and some of these guys are emerging candidates for governor and so mm-hmm. on. But you remember the Giacomonuses and the Kutzkes and one or two others, but there were many very decent people, but not very effective in that they didn't play the hard, rough games, you see, that were played by people like Giacomonus, but they were really in a minority. Now, take Flintrop, you mentioned. He really tried very hard to be helpful. He wasn't terribly effective because the Education Committee, you know, they didn't pay much attention to it because it was friendly. It was written off in part because they were so friendly to us.
Mm-hmm.
See, so that you see that so it does work if you take the other side too strongly. If your friends are discounted because they're soft-headed or something. Then there was a senator from Oshkosh who later got defeated.
Goyke. Goyke was always was basically very friendly and tried to be helpful.
I remember once on some bill, the labor people were on one side and the university on another, which was not uncommon in recent years. Goyke explained to me that he knew we were right, but they had paid for his campaign, and he was going to run for the Congress, and he needed their money, so he had to vote. But he was honest about it. See, that's the kind of thing I understand. You know,
mm-hmm.
But he didn't say he was going to vote with us, and then last minute to pretend to get new evidence or something. So there were many people like that. Losing Norm Anderson, I think, was the where we lost, and the Cap Times completely did that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that was a very, very damaging thing for us. Now, there were others that I found it difficult to deal with. Paul Offner in the Senate was one.
He was always pleasant to your face.
Yeah.
But what he would do behind your back, something else again.
And he was, again, a very, very ambitious man who was trying to engineer a sort of Proxmire-type career into the Congress, but didn't make it. He lost out, and
he's doing now.
Well, he got a job in Health and Social Services or something in Ohio. I heard some rumors that he might be brought back here. A lot of them, if they do lose out in their electoral campaigns, wind up either as lobbyists or as members of the bureaucracy, which means that even though their careers seem to be terribly threatened and terribly impermanent, if they're very loyal party people and work very hard and reasonably bright, why they sometimes wind up with very lucrative kinds of careers. Goyke, for example, has become extraordinarily prosperous by getting defeated and becoming a lobbyist. And he's at least the last time I saw him, he looked very prosperous. He said, I'm doing very well. He said, I'm a little ashamed, but he said, I'm doing very well. And,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
I would like to know how much Giacomonus affected what happened to the university in those years. Which ties in with the question of who was more important, the governor or the legislature?
He would make. I think it's fair to say that the traditional wisdom, at least that I came here with, and was always true in Minnesota, was that the governor's budget, if he is in a strong governor, and if his party controls both houses, as Lucy's did, that his executive budget is about the ceiling on what you're going to get. At that point, your problem is this: you're going to lose money in parts of his budget by legislative action, and you're going to get money in other parts by legislative action. And it's very seldom that this is an improvement over the governor's distribution. This is a, oh no. Yeah.
Once in a while you get something, but then remember the budget is more than money. That's where Lucy put policies.
Yeah.
And some of those policies were more damaging, and you worked very hard to modify them or substitute or get them out, you see. And this is where having somebody like Giacomonis would, because if you wanted something, he was against you.
Well, I can give you an instance. This is not dead yet. When I came here, the state legislature, I don't know when, but they had passed a little law directing, or a little part of the law directing the Department of Administration to establish a management information system. Well, that's that just showed their faith in numbers then, and that was all right. They had another little law that said that they should establish a personnel management information system, PMIS. But they specified that this should apply to all state four state agencies. It's very clear from the record that they meant by state agency everybody but the University of Wisconsin, and they didn't mean that, and they didn't mean the agencies that were just on local assistance, such as VTAE, or what they call local assistance, or state-aided or something. And then in 75 or thereabouts, they passed a bill which somehow slipped through, specifying that, and this was at the instance of DOA, and I think therefore the governor's office, which included the university as a state agency. First, they changed our address so that heads of state agencies also became the president of the university system. And then they made it clear that the state agencies to include the University of Wisconsin, I mean.
This was a particular legislator?
No, this was
from the Department of Administration.
Came from the department. And the legislature passed it. I don't know that the legislature knew what it was doing.
Into the budget, you know, or somebody brought it in. They wouldn't be against it.
No, it sounds all right.
But it's quite a thing that the governor wanted or the DOA wanted.
But it's something you must have gone down and fussed about.
Well, no, not
didn't know about it.
We didn't even know about it.
Just stuck in.
Sometimes.
This isn't such a democratic state as you may think it is if you're not just an innocent citizen. That caucus and that last budget dealings, the whole things get turned upside down, and they're done in the most horse trading manner. It's just buying and selling.
Well, that's what Mary Lou and Dick said, that it really had nothing to do with who believed in what, but you wanted to get the
But the policy questions, now here's what happens to you. Then we were reporting. We had, in fact, the University of Wisconsin system, and Madison was a overflow from computer programs that had been developed in Madison about the budget system. It was the most sophisticated personnel information system, I think, in the United States. It was integrated with the budget system. But there was one thing it wouldn't do, and that was by design. It would not read out the life history. It would not give Donald K. Smith a number that somebody could push and get a readout on my life history. If they wanted my life history at the University of Wisconsin, it was in the Red Book. You could go back through every budget book. You could find my name and find out what my salary was and what my title was, but you couldn't get a computer to tell you that. And I think that there were good reasons for doing that, but
they didn't like
Well, no, they didn't know what the difference was. This was a personnel management information system. Every month, Reuben Lorenz sent them down a report, which was beautifully detailed. Nobody objected. I saw the reports. They came across my desk. No other agency in the state could give them a tenth as much information on their personnel. But the university, then they got around to designing a system which was based on the notion that every employee in the state, including every employee in the university, has to have a number. And we went down, and then we had a long row. I can fill in the details some other time. But finally, the DOA people went over and devised another piece of legislative language, which was just about that blunt, that it all had to be one system, the same system for every state agency, and the university had to comply with this. And Reuben and I went down to a meeting of I think it was the Joint Finance Committee, where this was being put in as an amendment to the budget bill. And we had a long hearing on it, and we had lobbied very, very hard, and we got abused by almost everybody.
Was Jack on his
own? No, no. He wasn't on that. No, he was sitting in the room at part of the time, and they voted against it. They took it out. We were successful in our lobbying. Lo and behold, just before the final caucusing, the same language appeared at midnight at a hearing of the State Operations Committee. It reappeared. I learned later that it was carried in by Dick White from Giacomonis's office, passed by that committee at what was alleged to be an open meeting, but there was nobody there.
This is the Assembly Caucus.
This is another legislative committee. It's what they call the State Operations Committee. And I think it was the Senate version of that. And it was put back into the budget bill. Then we went down, and we had a horrid fight. We finally blocked that final language, although, as I understand, it's coming back in the caucus. But you see, it's not so simple to be where you should be at the right time when people need you, and it's not so simple to keep people who are skillful in the legislative process from slipping in these kinds of control legislation. They have nothing to do with the total dollar numbers, but they maybe have a great deal to do with the health and welfare.
Mm-hmm. You know, you take off that top sheet. Mm-hmm. The next sheet gives some of the questions that I have. And the final one is some quotes from... I'm curious as to how much influence you think they had. Let's see, Mary Lou came, they both came in 1972. Ed, do you remember what your reaction was to Mary Lou's election?
Mixed. I've forgotten. What did I say? Anything?
You apparently said something about Madison is now dependent upon two women in the legislature.
Well, you see, Mary Lou did very well. She was very bright. Much brighter than Midge, more thoughtful, and after a while more skillful. But I had why my feelings were mixed. Her husband was an ardent supporter of revolution,
yeah.
And she somehow kept Ray. I mean, it turned out of it. But she worked for us here, you know, so we knew her quite well. And she had some very strange notions about how we should run this place, but she did turn out. What?
Did she?
Oh, she was fairly critical of the center.
Oh, I see. The center, yeah.
And she, well, I don't need to go into that. So this is why I didn't know where she was going to come out at.
Yes.
But as it developed, she was a very good friend of the university. So was Midge. You know, the Jacomonas thing was, but by and large, Midge voted for what she thought the university wanted, and so did Mary Lou worked very hard at it.
From what she said, she felt the only way she could exercise any authority for the university was to represent the system and not to identify herself with medicine.
Yeah, well, but you know, that was not a great problem for us, because most of the time, Madison's interest in the systems are identical. The idea that they're different is in the legislature.
Well, I think what she meant was that if
she
said Midge would go into the legislature and say, speak about Madison and get everybody's backs up.
Mm-hmm.
And that she wanted to.
Yeah.
I think that was part of her difficulty. She tended to not to distinguish Madison and the system very much. Mm-hmm. But that, as Ed says, in terms of policy, I don't think in relation to the legislature that made any difference. You
the
know?
Thing mm-hmm. is that many things that happened downtown to the system really affected Madison only. Because, you know, if you say the research budget is going to be cut, or the agricultural budget, that means Madison. If you say something else, it means Madison. So often, that even though it was worded as the system, but it was really, that we cared more. We worked harder at it, at helping the system, because we're helping ourselves. And the legislative problems of the rest of the system, Milwaukee was partly like us, but only partly. So, I came to have a good deal of respect and gratitude to Mary Lou. Although, as I say, when she got elected, I wasn't at all sure, because I had been at, you know, her whom I had rescued from unemployment once. And what Ray was really quite bitter about, you know, he thought that I was unfair to the radicals and so on. He had he wasn't well. Part of that is trouble. You know, he had quite serious. Do you know them?
Yes, very well.
Yeah, he seems to be better now, doesn't he? Did he have?
It's the medicine's keeping him.
Yeah, the medicine. But you know, when he got off that, so I didn't know. But and then they have of course that terrible tragedy and all. Well, mm-hmm. No, I've come to have a great deal of respect for her, and she did very well on the Public Utility Board.
Mm-hmm. So
she's
she
very
still doing.
When she first came into the legislature, she was a very able person, I think. But and she at various points was helpful, but her primary enthusiasms were in the area of environment and women's issues, and not the university. She did not. She wasn't on the education committee at the time I was there, and she was not on joint finance. And she was not on the subcommittees that dealt with university budget items on joint finance, which were very critical. Mm-hmm.
And the way they presented it, which is, of course, just their story, that they were influential in the caucuses in pushing the university.
Well, along with other people, yes, you know.
Well, that's who
Who elected Mr. Carter, the blacks or the women?
Yeah.
Well, hey, you couldn't win without either of them, you see.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
But their main criticism of the university was that it didn't lobby enough for its interests. And that's what I'd like to know what you did exactly, and you also, Don.
Yeah.
But who you went to see and how often and
well,
how important you thought it was.
I thought it was very important. But, well, first place, you see, I have in two different
two
roles.
Jobs,
one was chancellor, you see.
Yeah, and you did say Percy told you not to go downtown.
Yeah, but that I didn't
mean.
That word got leaked by one of the other chancellors. Of course, they made fun. The legislators were very annoyed at that. Mm. For a short time, didn't help Percy any, and he was silly, because the people who were against Percy continued to do it, and the others gave them license not to do anything, so you lost. We lost on all counts. Well, it worked, but I continued to go downtown as chancellor. I didn't pay any attention to that because it didn't make any sense to me, and nobody was going to do anything about it. Nothing you could do about it. I frustrated Percy a good deal because there wasn't really an easy way to get at me. You know, if he did anything with Madison's budget, he'd have to take on the whole, and he wasn't going to do that. He was supportive of Madison, of course he was, but he just didn't like the independence that I, and I did, I could have behaved better, probably, more subservient or more, you know, could have done better. Anyway, I went down.
How often would you go down?
Well, it depended on the circumstance, but not, I didn't go too often. I figured that the one thing I couldn't afford to be was the thought of somebody who hangs around the legislature all the time. Because while they're saying to you, these we didn't lobby enough, other people were saying, the lobbyists are always down here.
Yeah.
You, that's one you never win. Because when they want to criticize you, they'll go either way on that one. I think we had people down there a great deal. I had great confidence in Breuscher and Lemon to keep me informed. Yes, I think they were both excellent.
Oh, well, that's not their view.
Whose view?
The Mary Lou and Dick Winter.
Yeah, well, that's notion. But what they could do depended on how much authority they were given, you see.
Yes.
And if somebody goes down and says, this is the university position, and they get a phone call in a few minutes from another university administrator saying, something else.
Yes.
You've got a problem on your hands, and we had that happen.
Percy undercut them, didn't it?
That's my impression, very strongly sometimes.
Yes.
Not all the time, you know, but just enough so that they weren't. Well, once Bill Young stopped representing the university downtown, we never had anybody down there regularly who had authority. Of course, when I went down, or when Don went down, when Percy went down, or John Weaver went down, there was authority. But we couldn't afford to be down there all the time, you know, because familiarity certainly breeds contempt down there. And I was down when I, for instance, I depend on Breuscher or Lemon to say, you better come on down, and I'd go down. And I had confidence in them, and I still do. You know, I've seen it. I've seen a lot of other people. I was advised, the moment I became president of the system, to get rid of everybody and get some good people. What?
Who advised
you? Oh, several of the regents, a lot of the legislators. The same thing that happened to the man before them, and before that. It's just common. And now after... we've got, is it Bernstein now?
Bornstein
is doing it. He's probably going to be a tremendous success for about a year or so. Then he'll be old hat.
He's not a lobbyist, right? He's the head of, isn't he the head of the...
Well, he's the major lobbyist.
What else is he supposed to do?
I see. I wondered about that. I mean, he's called public relations, but in fact...
Well, it's a higher salary, so it'd do better.
Well, they have more lobbyists.
Don, you and I have never discussed this because I guess, well, for one thing, you may have known my mind was made up, or maybe the other side of it was that you agreed with me. But did you have confidence in Lemon and Breuscher?
Yes. I don't think either of them could carry an uncontrolled agenda of authority. I don't think they wanted it. I think they needed to be counseled and to be given the university's position, and I think they'd go down and represent it. And they were very good, as Ed said, about finding out where meetings were, and they would... I had only limited time. I didn't come here to lobby. I'd never... I'd been very active over in Minnesota in going down to the legislature, but to the committee hearings where I was presumably able to testify about the items that the university had requested, and also sometimes to go over and talk to friends. And I did the same thing here. And I had found that, that there was an enormously complex committee structure in the Wisconsin legislature, and that there were a lot of committee meetings that I had to be to, and Brusher and Lemon would let me know about those. Now, the one at midnight that I was talking about, they didn't let me know. Mm-hmm. They'd gone home at 11:30, and
they both have a great deal of integrity.
Yeah.
See, and honest, and they were honest, and they were hardworking. I respect integrity very highly.
But there were two things that I have been consistent in my experience. They were consistent in my experience at Minnesota and here. One is that a legislator who is not being very influential on your behalf immediately says that the problem is that you're not creating the political support that is necessary to get this through. I'm doing my best, but I don't have any help. That's a well. I've heard that for 20 years. Now here's the second thing. You throw a lot of money into it, or you become extremely visible, and the people who want to do you in will immediately attack the university as a political machine, which is no longer a university and therefore has to be clubbed over the head to teach it a lesson. They shouldn't be down here twisting our arms. They're supposed to be teaching students and conducting.
The university is cause.
Yeah. So you get people who say, well, why aren't you as effective as the Brewers? You know, and the answer is very simple. One is that we'll go to jail if we start giving money to campaigns, and the other thing is that we'll also go to jail, or it's against the law for us to take people out to dinner and pick up the tabs and have parties for them. As a matter of fact, we were criticized by people who were much more influential in the determining the final outcome down in the legislature. We were criticized when we would invite key legislators over to John Weaver's house and provide a buffet and free drinks. And they would say, this is a, then we'd get the rumbles downtown that whose money is this? Is this what you're using state money for to twist our arms?
Did you ever do that, Ed? Have legislators out
yes.
there?
Yes.
But Ed
I had them for breakfast.
Yeah, that's right.
They were sober then.
Yeah.
was there objection to that?
No.
Not very many.
No.
This would be a very rare thing, but the one man that you could count on for it was Giacomonis.
Yeah, he would make. Critical. He probably wouldn't. I don't know if he ever came or not.
He came once and didn't speak to any university person. He refused.
Sounds like you'd helped organize these.
I didn't help organize them. When John was here, Wally and...
When Ed was president.
Well, when Ed was president, I don't know. He organized it.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
he organized
whom
it.
Did you have?
Well, I'd try to find people, pick people that were involved with a particular issue or joint finance leadership people. Mm-hmm. Try to avoid having cronies. You know, not trying to have anybody make it look so. It would always be a variety of people. But I would not. I wouldn't get a whole bunch of people who disagreed with me either. You know, there's no point. It was just something to do.
Well, who were the leadership people then?
Well, who were the leadership people? There was Fred Risser would be one, for instance, mm-hmm. chairman of committees.
Who never did very much for the university, except both.
Well, sometimes he gave me a lot of information on about how to maneuver quietly.
Right.
I'd go to Fred's office, and I got a lot of help from Fred. And he was, again, he would tell me, it was a little bit like George Molinaro. When I went to see George, I'd have to listen for an hour to a lecture on what we were doing that was wrong, but then he'd support us. Well, Fred didn't take quite an hour to tell me what was wrong, but took quite a lot of time, but it was worth it.
I've known him take 45 minutes.
Your gentle view of people? You really felt that Risser was useful to you?
Yes, indeed.
I can agree, and I...
He's not gentle at all.
No, I said you... Oh, I see. Yeah.
Oh, no, I obviously have fangs.
No, it isn't. You know, don't misunderstand me. I'm not the kindest person in the world, but I don't. Maybe I don't I'm cynical and don't expect too much, and so when I get a crumb, I appreciate it.
Okay, well, who besides Fred Rissard then?
Oh, there were a variety of people at different...
obviously, yes.
Yeah, I'd have to have the list of them, look at the names. They would be... and sometimes it would be, for instance, a man up Audi on some things. See, different issues.
Yes.
Often we were... One of the things about our problem, we were reacting so much, and we had so many different things going, whereas he was committed to somebody because of a bridge or something, or because of something was in the bill which would hurt us, but they got to him first. But by and large, Audie was friendly to education. Not all the time, but there were people like, you know, and I could go through, there were a lot of different legislators who...
There was a faculty member from Milwaukee who was a legislator for some years, finally went back to the faculty. I was trying to recall his name. He was on joint finance. He was extremely helpful. Mm-hmm. Now, when I say helpful, these people, the primary thing they did for us was get rid of some of the worst of the regulatory policy business. They were of limited help on numbers.
Another thing they did is they'd leak to us, tell us things that were happening that we didn't know about, because they'd been talked about quietly in the halls, you know. The more the open meetings, the less democracy, because then all the deals are cut.
That's one of the points they make very strongly, is that the open meetings really hurt Madison, which had profited by insider dealing. Mm-hmm. And that's true, isn't it?
Well, no, we profit by open
genuinely open meetings.
Oh, that is where the legislators get together and talk without the press. Uh-huh. And instead of that, three or four get over in a corner somewhere and cook it all up and then take it into the caucus.
If you were on the inside, then it was...
You can't be on the inside. We would have known what was going on better, and people would have been more responsible. Take the Regents, I felt the same way. The Regents, I hardly ever had a frank discussion about anything where they all participated, because they came together and there was the press. And the ones who were serious and thoughtful wouldn't speak up because the others were hogging the TV camera and making speeches, and so we never had a good discussion. Whereas if we could have had closed the press out, we could have really then when the voting came, let the press come in. I'm against. I've spoken very anywhere, anytime against the open meeting law as being undemocratic.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think. Well, I just like it. Did you think of Mary Lou as an influential legislator when you said you had people out for breakfast?
Yes, she would be one of the people, she was chairman of a committee particularly.
Uh-huh.
And the Madison people in general I would have, you see, because they were the ones that carried water for us.
Yeah.
You know, lots of times they did things, they did them partly because they came from the west side, they better.
Let me give you another insight into the legislative mind. See, Dick Flintrop used to bend my arm by the hour down there, but he needed our help. Mm-hmm. We had not been able to put together enough pressure to get enough votes. He had worked his head off in caucus and had lost. Mm-hmm. And I would sit and say, well, you know, I wish we could do more. Then there would be this other, we'd get at the same time, I would know that when we tried to do more, why we would get zinged for...
But did you tell Dick Flintrop?
Yes, I would tell him that, but he didn't, but that doesn't help him.
So he wasn't quite so useful.
He wasn't as useful.
I liked Dick.
I liked Dick, but he took it up on himself when he was chairman of the committee. He was going to run the university. He wanted to be invited to meetings. He came and sat in the Regents meetings, and he was going to advise us. And it came a point where I just had to say, you know, we can't do it that way. When he got made chairman of the committee, he thought that gave him complete knowledge about all higher education.
You didn't like legislators coming to Regents meetings.
Well, I didn't mind his coming to Regents if he didn't decide to give advice to me afterwards how we should settle things.
And he did.
Oh, yes, he was quite sure about a lot of things.
He very frequently had strong opinions that you...
You know.
I know he collective bargaining, of course, he favored that.
Yeah, well, that's because he was supported by the labor people. He almost had to, and you know, I understand that.
So that isn't particularly...
No, not that one. But there were other things. He just wanted to run. He wanted once he said to me, I wish you wouldn't make policies without first discussing them with me. This is internal university rules and region things.
Yeah.
You know, that I should go to the region and say, now I've got the approval of Dick Flintrop. You know,
what did you say to him? What did you say to him?
Oh, I put him off one way or another. No,
Ed was very good at saying no, but...
Not saying yes.
Not saying yes, yes.
You have to be.
You have to be with legislators.
Or with lots of people. You see, one of my shortcomings, perhaps, was that I'd heard so much of it all before so many times that sometimes I didn't listen as carefully to people like who got sudden wisdom by getting made chairman of a committee. They were important. I didn't insult them. And I tried to play along with them, but I wouldn't say, well, look, I'm going to consult you on these matters, because I had no intention of consulting him. It would have been improper to consult him. But he was overly impressed with his own importance.
Let me give you another recent example of the vagaries of legislative opinion about lobbyists. Now, this is in his last year, Mr. O'Neill put a great deal of money into lobbyists. He hired actually a vice president and two associate vice presidents, and maybe an assistant, I don't know, but all in addition to all of the staff that was already there. And so in the last year he was here, they were omnipresent, Bornstein and one of the other two. There was one for university business.
Judith Ward.
Yeah, and the other one was supposedly because of relations with the university industry, research relations, and so on. And then I had a session last year at this training meeting I had with academic staff, people in important administrative positions at Madison. This was a year-long seminar of some sort of an experimental thing. At one session, I had Tom Loftus and Tommy Thompson and Lon Sprecher, and I had somebody else. I had four people out who one way or another knew a great deal about the political process and were variously friendly or unfriendly to the university and whatnot. And it was a very interesting meeting, but I won't go into that. But at the break time, I was talking to Tom and Tommy, who were sitting there chatting cordially. And I said, how are we doing down in the legislature? And they both said, well, I tell you, I can't remember which one initiated it, said, we're sick and tired of seeing university lobbyists down there and never seeing the president.
Now, that's interesting, because I thought O'Neill went, or you're talking about Shaw?
No, I'm talking about O'Neill.
Because I thought O'Neill went down there a great deal.
Well, not, see, after he got to this big team, they were down there every day, all the time. Uh-huh. And these two people said that, you know, they were in effect saying, now we don't, this sudden escalation of effort, you see, was being criticized in another way. So,
we failed, and I knew what I should have been done, and I didn't accomplish it in this lobbying business. The best lobbyists are where you can get individual faculty members who have a reputation to deal with legislators and keep up a contact. But it takes a lot of doing, and you run into the resistance of your staff, because staff people, particularly in the system administration, they know better than anybody about everything. You know, they know.
That's true.
And so I, but you know, it's the same way we've got it in the university now. The advising is not done by faculty members anymore in the College of Letters and Science. We've hired people, academic staff people. They've read the book, they know all the rules and all that, but the students want to deal with faculty members. And it's the same way with the legislature. In the success, Maine had a system, which I inherited when I went there. It was a marvelous system. Every single, the state was divided up into areas, and each area had a faculty member who was responsible for the legislators there, and they cultivated them, got to know them. I went out and had lunch or breakfast with the whole group, and we got the Republican legislature to overturn the Democratic governor's budget and give us 25% more.
Why didn't you institute that here?
Well, I tried to, but I didn't get much help. This is a bigger place.
It's
the inertia of it is very great. Mm-hmm. This is one of the things that saves it, you know, in the bad times, the inertia, because the place goes on anyway. But it is what I should have done more of. I tried to do some of it, but I would talk about it. I'd get agreement from staff people, but they never did much about it, and I was too busy, and I didn't do enough about it. But I did on occasion. But that is the most effective way, I'm still convinced. But it takes some doing, and adding more vice presidents isn't going to do it.
That's what they did at the Ketchum, was to have faculty meeting with legislators.
Yes, that was the university committee put on a good show.
Yeah. But you see, they can't do that all the time. Is supposed to be doing some of that, and maybe they will do more. They have had some. They did a good time thing there.
Yeah, profs has worked hard at that. But faculty members, you can only shoot them down on a limited number of issues because they're supposed to be teaching and doing research, and they.